are bringing in this wealth of experience from their previous work and life experiences. And we've got to learn to recognize that these are not fresh out of high school learners who we can lecture to. This is how the world is, you know.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast. Welcome, everyone, to the Digital to Learn podcast. This is Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner.
Hey, Tiffany. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks. If you missed the last episode of the podcast, you can hear part one of our conversation on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or the Digital to Learn website. And now, part two. Welcome, Mark.
Hello.
You've had experience in teacher education, so as we have lecturers that are interested in having more problem-based learning, more authentic e-learning, do you have any advice of how we can do a better job of engaging our faculty in professional development and training them for those experiences?
Yeah, so that is an interesting question. Underlying it is in the question, there's kind of the assumption that there's a problem with engagement, and maybe there is in other contexts. And again, I think there's a contextual thing here in the country that I'm in. A school teacher, a K-12 school teacher, as well as having a degree in their subject area, needs to have a master's degree in pedagogy to teach in schools. And in higher education, you still need to gain a qualification in pedagogy and assessment. So, you know, you can be a cutting edge researcher in, I don't know, theoretical physics. If you're going to go and teach, you still got to learn how to be a damn good teacher. So that used to be actually written into law.
Wow.
That was legislative, but that changed about 2 years ago, and now it's up to individual universities. But to my knowledge, I haven't heard of one that has kind of said, you know, we're relaxing that rule. And the only thing I have heard is of them, where they're in a shortage subject, hiring somebody on the condition that they get qualified within 2 years or 18 months or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we take the art and craft of teaching kind of seriously. And we work a lot on teachers' professional identity in terms of what does it mean to be a teacher? What do you believe your role is? What do you think learning is? So they're quite heavy philosophical questions to deal with.
In our country, I would say that that's kind of the family secret of higher education. Mm-hmm. We have faculty who are experts in their academic disciplines, have done marvelous research. But when it comes to communicating that content or engaging students with that content, they are at a loss. And there's no reason why we should expect them to know how to do that. So what they typically do is go back to the way they were taught, which is the lecturer.
I think that's pretty unfortunate in that I work with teachers from all over the world in my job. And I think the situation you described is very common, and it's kind of Finland that's the outlier there. The UK, there have been some moves. The Higher Education Academy has something called a teaching fellowship, which is kind of an award you can work towards getting, which recognizes excellence in teaching. Yeah, you're right. I think the default position is being an expert in a subject kind of de facto makes you able to teach it, which, of course, we all know the reality is that's not always true.
And then because I know so much, I have so much to tell you. So sit and listen to everything I have to say.
Absolutely. I think we've all been in that classroom.
Yes, absolutely.
So kind of going off of this, it just makes me more curious about Finland. Are there course designers then there, or is the faculty responsible for the course design, the course load, the teaching, all the above? Because technically they have training in what it sounds like all those areas.
Yeah, that is slowly changing. When I moved here in 2013 and there was no such career path as an instructional designer, that is slowly changing, but it really, really is slowly. By and large, as an educator, you are expected to be able to wear most of those hats. I mean, a good course would still have graphic designers and, if you will, the techie people who who make all the stuff happen behind, you know, the coding stuff. I don't know how it works. I believe it's magic. and dark magic, possibly, when it comes to that. But yeah, in terms of, if you will, the skills that typically an instructional designer would have. In fact, that's one on the teacher education program. That is actually one of the courses that I teach, one that looks at designing and implementing an online course. Whether people are training to their background, their subject is something like engineering, or literally one of my students a couple of years ago was a theoretical physicist, which is why I use that example. So yeah, all kinds of backgrounds and career paths, and they still have to learn how to be a teacher.
So when you think about an online learning environment where you have a body of content, you have a faculty engaging that with their students, what's the role of social technologies or social media in that process?
Well, I think it's crucial, the social technologies. I guess I want to start by differentiating, though, between social technologies that enable social interaction and social media platforms.
Oh, okay.
I mean, a few years ago, if we were doing this maybe, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago, yeah, about that, I guess, I was one of these who thought, oh, isn't it great we can use Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and use all these social media platforms. And I was a real advocate for all of that. I'm embarrassed to say now. now, I mean, it just almost seems like every day we learn something new that means we don't really want to be there in this kind of surveillance economy, as Zuboff described it. I mean, I really do believe learning is a social activity. And it's really important for those social interactions to be designed in. In fact, I go as far to say I would want to see aspects of connectivism and, if you will, a kind of the idea of network knowledge, of a networked heutagogy, if you will, rather than pedagogy, of knowledge. So it's not transmission from the teacher. It is actually about sharing knowledge, expertise, and experience of the learners as well. So I think within whatever learning management platform, again, though I kind of cringe when I use that term, learning management, but still, within whatever system or platform we're using, it's really important that there is a social component. It's absolutely essential. But unless students themselves are choosing to go to social media, we are no longer kind of saying, oh, yes, post this to a Facebook page or let's use the following hashtag or whatever. We're not doing that anymore. Sense.
So within those learning management systems, other than a discussion forum, what are some of the other social platforms that you see as valuable?
Okay, well, I like video discussion forums and also synchronous video, you know, Skype or Zoom is really valuable. Most of my online courses that I teach, the students will get together synchronously at least once a week in small groups. And sometimes a teacher will be present to that and sometimes not. And they'll set up and arrange that and kind of record, you know, not literally record it, though they may, but if you will, minute it, document it. Some students do choose to use things like WhatsApp, Flipgrid, and other things like that. So we kind of encourage a range of things, but I think context really matters. And the students I've got on my distance courses, online courses, are from all over the world. And for example, those students that are in the Middle East, video internet is actually technically illegal, though they can find ways around it with VPNs and things. But, you know, we don't want to be an institution that says, yes, you must be doing this illegal thing. ethically very questionable. So, I think students as well have to work with us to find the social technologies that work for them in the context in which they're working and living.
Very good.
Yeah. So what would you say excites you about the future of digital learning and higher ed?
Ooh, what excites me? okay, I mean, it's digital learning, that's an interesting phrase in itself, because I do wonder whether we're actually post-digital now. And what I mean by post-digital is that the digital is now so ubiquitous, it's just embedded in almost everything we do.
Yeah.
But I wonder whether the terminology of differentiating digital is relevant. So I don't mean to be insulting in that comment. I just like, I'm just being the pedagogical provocateur.
No, it's great.
But yeah, I mean, we don't talk about, we're doing book learning this evening. Mm-hmm. So why do we say we're doing digital learning in this course? So I wonder whether we're post-digital anyway. But what does excite me? I guess it's the efficacies that technology can provide for us. I'm so lucky to work with these trainee teachers and trainee educational leaders from around the world. And if it wasn't for the technologies, I wouldn't be able to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we could send snail mail and write long letters to each other, but it just wouldn't be the same. So I still try and feel optimistic. So, and most days I manage that for a little while and hope that the way these technologies can connect us can open up education to people who otherwise might not have had access. But yeah, I guess it's that excites me. Overall, I'm still of a mind, though, that I think blended is best. I mean, online is good, face-to-face is good, but I really think a blend of the two is the best way to make use of educational technology.
We would totally agree with that.
Yes, we would.
Yeah?
It's the best of both worlds.
If it's done right.
Correct.
If you do it badly, you can end up with the worst.
The worst of both worlds.
But yeah, but you're right. If you design it right, you really can end up with the best of both worlds. So yeah.
So what do you see as the biggest challenges for higher ed moving forward in this post-digital world? We're going to coin that phrase and use it everywhere
now.
Yeah,
I think we are.
Okay, well, the challenge we're reading most about, or I am certainly at the moment, are these issues that we face around data collection, analytics, and privacy, and the data sets being used to train AI, machine learning, and the inbuilt bias in those. So I think those are challenges, and I don't think societies, politicians, and ethical philosophers have really been able to keep up with the change there. Mm-hmm. And there may be some lag before we really figure out how to deal with some of those issues.
Mm. Yeah.
So I try and be optimistic that there is a solution to some of those issues. But nihilistic days, I'm not so sure. So that's kind of one challenge for sure. I think another challenge we face is I think higher education in general needs to open up to what are often referred to as non-traditional students. Mm-hmm. Because as we talk more and hear more about the rate of change and the need for lifelong learning, so rather than the idea of front-loading your education with a degree at the beginning and then you're set to go for life, I think those days have gone. And we need to gear our higher education institutions and therefore our digital learning or post-digital learning technologies to cater for and help those people. And I think, therefore, that represents a challenge in terms of the institutional culture, the identity of the institution, and the staff who work in it as well.
Yeah.
Having more mature learners from different backgrounds who are maybe coming back to learn something new, you know, in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond.
You can also have a lot to share from their own personal experiences related to that content.
Yeah, the authentic e-learning really comes out.
I think that's absolutely true. And that kind of then pins back to the comment earlier about this kind of the idea of a network of knowledge. These people are bringing in this wealth of experience from their previous work and life experiences. And we've got to learn to recognize that these are not fresh out of high school learners who we can lecture to. This is how the world is, you know.
Because they can also be active contributors.
Absolutely. Yeah. As much, if not more so. If you've got a faculty member who's been institutionalized in a higher education institution for 20 years, and this person's just come straight out of another employment job, absolutely. You know, it's so you're right there, Brad. Yeah.
What a great partnership that could be, though.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I see all of this as presenting, in a way, opportunities as much as challenges.
Absolutely.
If we were doing SWOT analysis, it's one of these, is this a challenge or is this an opportunity? So, and yeah, I guess the final one. Sorry, long answer to this one.
That's good.
I mean, I do believe, as I mentioned earlier, education is a public good. It's a human right, in my view. And so, and what worries me with digital technologies is often they're a way, it seems to me at least, to introduce, if you will, kind of the market into education in terms of platforms that collect data that institutions are paying for and so on. So that part of me that's, as I quoted Freire, that part of me that's a critical pedagogue will always kind of be resisting this, that kind of move, and fighting to keep education as a public human right. So yeah, they're pretty challenging.
Well, Mark, you've given us lots to think about today.
Good.
And don't be surprised if Brad and I and the podcast team take a train to Finland. I think you've inspired us to visit. So
that would be great. You'd certainly be very welcome. Yeah, we do manage to get a few hours of daylight at this time of year. Not very much. Although, oh, if you come in summer, you won't get any darkness, which is probably just
that is
bad.
Excellent.
Yeah. But yeah, you'd be very welcome.
Very good.
Well, thank you so much for being with us on the podcast today. And we're going to be sure in our Digital to Learn social media and on our website to post some links and resources to some of your work so that others can connect with you as well. But yeah, thanks for being here.
It's been a pleasure. It's been really nice to talk to you. Thank you so much, really.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.